First, I'd like to thank Tom and Anselm for the invitation to speak here and congratulate them on their incredibly rich and wonderful and ambitious exhibition, which I look forward to spending more time in tomorrow. I also say that my talk relates to the second term and the title, Deep Time and Crisis. It's about crisis, although there's plenty to say about Einstein and time. A poignant narrative emerges from Carl Einstein's collected writings, a tale of the protracted and ultimately failed struggle of a leftist intellectual to justify contemporary art to himself as much as to his readers as a transformative social practice. For the better part of three decades, Einstein passionately, tenaciously clung to the belief that a change in artistic form could change human visuality. And by changing human visuality, it could change human subjectivity and our construction of reality, forging a new collectivity. Artworks were, I quote Einstein, an early phase of the real. For the real was, quoting him again, a human invention and must always be invented anew because it is continually dying away. It lay within art's power to redefine the real, to create a compelling alternate version of the world, and this was its ultimate function and justification. This belief received its consummate articulation in Georges Braque, Einstein's last publication on art. The book is a key object in the present exhibition, and rightly so, for Einstein's Georges Braque is a microcosm of the crisis that is the subject of this exhibition. Janus faced, it comprises the final statement of Einstein's utopian hopes for art, but also intimations of their imminent collapse. Einstein's state of mind as he was writing the book comes through in a letter to his friend Ewald Wasmuth from the summer of 1932 as he was near completing the manuscript, and I quote, "This Braque book is, of course, not a book about Braque. The less so as I have had quite my fill of painting as though it were mashed up spaghetti. Dear Ewald, I am so tired and sick of everything that I can't do this anymore. Art, art, assez. I can no longer bear to smell the swindle. I have had quite enough of this stupid genius business, which is so revoltingly mercantile." That this was not just a passing spell of bad humor is indicated by several other letters, including one from the previous autumn, again to Wasmuth. This is the autumn of 31. "The art book that I still have to do will be my last. I am fed up with it. It makes me sick. Fed up with theories, too. We have been pasted over with this wallpaper long enough. Either something completely different will come my way, or Herr Einstein isn't writing anymore." These letters strongly suggest that by the time Einstein finished Georges Braque, he no longer believed in much of what he had written there. That he wished to distance himself from the book when it was finally published in the spring of 1934 is suggested by a note on the copyright page. This book was written in 1931, 1932. So if the Braque book isn't a book about Braque, what is it? The German manuscript consists of seven chapters of vastly unequal length. Chapter 6, for example, at 89 pages, the longest in the manuscript, that's typescript pages, is longer than the first five chapters combined, which total 82 pages. Perhaps this is why when the book was published in French translation, the first four chapters were consolidated into one with chapters 5 through 7 now renumbered as chapters 2 through 4. And here you see the renumbering of chapter 5 as chapter 2. I should mention that the German manuscript, previously available only within editions, two complete editions or almost complete editions of Einstein's writings, is now available since 2013. As a separate book by Diophanous Verlag. And it retains the original seven-page structure. In its contents, Georges Braque is an odd patchwork. Five chapters of the German manuscript lead like a collection of individual essays on various topics with scant mention of Braque. His name occurs only 15 times in those five chapters, merely twice in chapter one, and not at all in chapters 2 and 4, Where Brock is mentioned at all, it is usually in passing as a single isolated sentence, an apparent interpolation, probably a concession to the publisher as well as to the reader, who might reasonably expect the name Brock to appear in an eponymous book before Chapter 6. Yet even in Chapter 6, Brock serves primarily as an occasional example for Einstein's discussion of cubism. In the French edition, he is mentioned twice in a single paragraph at the bottom of the first page and doesn't reappear until 13 pages later. Only in Chapter 7 of the manuscript, Chapter 4 in the book, dealing with Brock's art since the end of the war, can Georges Braque truly be called a Braque book. There his name appears more times by half than in the other chapters combined. Even so, there's less concrete discussion of his art there than in the mere six pages Einstein had devoted to Braque in the third edition of The Art of the 20th Century. The origins of the Braque book are obscure, and its genesis, insofar as we can reconstruct it, may partly explain its patchwork character and its internal contradictions. There is evidence that the book is an amalgam of two separate projects, publication projects. This is suggested by the correspondence over a three-year period between Einstein and Ewald Wasmuth and Wasmuth's partner, Sophia Kinsthaler. The first project to be mentioned was one that Einstein referred to as his aesthetics, which in one letter he identifies as consisting of einzelne Beiträge, individual essays or articles. A book on Braque he refers to only once in this over this three-year period in the letter that I just cited, in which he says it's not a book about Braque. And it is presumably identical with the art book he mentions as the book with the book he first mentions to Wasmuth in the late autumn of 1931. He was working, he writes, grudgingly and out of financial necessity, it seems, on, I quote, a book that is being published in Paris and by Via in New York, but this is by no means a marvelous thing, this between us, even though it sounds wonderful. One writes and at the same time calculates how and whether one will survive. Via, it should be noted, was to be the co-publisher of Georges Braque. This book, which Einstein did not identify, was clearly not the aesthetics, for in the same letter he added that after he was done with it, I will try to bring out my aesthetics. It seems then that in Georges Braque, the aesthetics and the art book had been merged into a single volume, probably at Einstein's insistence. If it seems probable, Georges Braque comprises what Einstein called his aesthetics, it might more accurately be called his anti-aesthetics. This is especially evident in the book's first four chapters. There he attacks art historians for aestheticizing, domesticating, and normalizing the artwork, for reducing the history of art to a formalist narrative of technical progress. As a corrective, he calls for a sociology or ethnology of art, then images will regain their importance as vital, active forces. The question of art's social function has now assumed an unprecedented critical urgency in Einstein's writing. Central to this is a critique of liberalism. It's the term he uses. It had produced a culture of absolute relativism and anarchic yet indecisive individualism and a formless mass of interpretations. Fragmenting the world into a congeries of meanings and sensations, impressionism was its artistic manifestation. Thus, artworks had become problematic and suspect. Isolated and autonomous, they were valued primarily as aesthetic constructs. We despise the appreciation of artworks as rare or precious bibelots, countered Einstein. Artworks concern us only to the extent that they contain the means to modify the real, the structure of the human subject, and our images of the world. Cubism in the art of Georges Braque met this stringent demand. Cubism transformed the structure of seeing and defined anew the optical world picture, which had decayed into a confused anecdotal mass of objects. Now the claims of the artist vis-a-vis society were considerably strengthened. This is an extremely brief summation of Einstein's argument in George Brock, and I'll explain upon it shortly. The contradictions within the book appear already in the first chapter, where there is a conflict between what the text says and the character of the object in which it is contained. Einstein assails the art historical genre of the monograph for its myopic perspective, its apotheosis of the petit bourgeois ego in which the bourgeois encounters a mirror image of himself delightfully exalted, in which pictures are revered as self-sufficient organisms detached from their manifold living interconnections. This, he writes, is what marks the aesthetic cast of mind. Yet, with illustrations of 102 works by Brock, a separate luxury edition of 50 numbered copies with two original etchings signed by the artist and a color pochoir, plus an additional 200 numbered copies with one signed etching, George Brock certainly looked like a monograph, and a fancy and expensive one at that. In its high production values, the book appears as an exemplum of the very aesthetic culture that Einstein critiques, the culture of rare or precious bibelots. That is but one of the oddities of this idiosyncratic book. Sebastian Seidler is one of the few scholars to acknowledge that something seems not quite right about Einstein's Brock book. I quote, "The brevity and hyperbole of its post-cubism sections reveal that book as a largely commemorative exercise," he comments. In his heart of hearts, Einstein was well aware that Brock was no longer producing significant new work. Picasso, on the other hand, had lately been growing strong again. Yet, the book gives just the opposite impression. In all of Einstein's previous accounts of cubism, going back to 1923, he had treated it as the joint project of Brock and Picasso. Brock's name appears 15 times in the long 1931 Picasso section of The Art of the 20th Century, and that's just the Picasso text, which directly precedes the section devoted to Brock. In his dismissive comments on the book, Seidler writes that by 1930, one member of the Cubist dyad had faded away. He means Brock. But in George Brock, the one who has faded away is Picasso. In chapter 6, Einstein refers often to the Cubists, twice to Brock and the Cubists, and even to the two major masters of Cubism. But remarkably, the name Picasso appears nowhere in the book. In one passage, Einstein writes of how the daring paintings of the two cubists constitute a historical deed of the first order, but only Brock is named. In him, a reinvention of the world, of seeing, and of space is attempted and realized. The omission of Picasso's name becomes even stranger, given that in June 1932, only weeks before he completed the Brock manuscript, Einstein had assisted Picasso, presumably at the invitation of the artist, in installing his largest ever retrospective at the Galerie Georges Petit in Paris with 236 works. This was the largest exhibition of his work ever held. What to make of this? The most plausible explanation for Picasso's demotion to the status of the unnamed cubist is that in the summer of 1932, as Einstein was bringing the text to completion, Brock's relations with Picasso became acutely strained. The Zurich Kunsthaus had planned a joint exhibition of Brock, Leger, and Picasso for that October. But following the Georges Petit exhibition, Picasso insisted that he be represented on the same scale in Zurich, which, because of limitations of space and presumably also of finances, meant that the three-man exhibition had to be canceled in favor of a solo Picasso retrospective. As a compromise, the director of the Kunsthaus offered Brock and Leger a joint exhibition for the following spring. Leger agreed. Brock declined and instead accepted an invitation for a solo exhibition, his first retrospective, at the Kunsthalle Basel. By December 1932, Brock had invited Einstein to curate the exhibition, which at just under 200 works was nearly as large as Picasso's had been. The surviving correspondence suggests that Einstein committed himself to the task with great dedication. This may seem odd, given what he wrote to Wasmuth about his deep disgust with the art world. We'll probably never know what went through his mind as he took this on. It appears he received no honorarium for curating the show. Certainly a factor was his personal relationship with his personal friendship with Braque, which dated to the early 1920s. And it bears mentioning that while he was organizing Braque's exhibition, the painter served as witness in Einstein's marriage to Lida Gavrikian. If Picasso is totally absent from Georges Braque, one could say that he is there in spirit. For Einstein Picassifies Braque. Let me explain. In the second edition of The Art of the 20th Century, he completely rewrote and greatly expanded the Picasso section. He enlarged it to five times its original length, while leaving the rest of the book, including the section on Braque, relatively unchanged. He developed and expanded it further by an additional 1,400 words in the third edition. Under the influence of surrealism and psychoanalysis, Einstein moved from a basically phenomenological interpretation of Picasso's cubism to one that treated it as a product of unconscious psychic forces expressed in dreams and violent hallucinations. He linked this tapping of the unconscious with archetypal sexual forms. In their universality, these gave this art what he called a collective ground. Einstein's liberal mix of Freud and Jung yielded an ostensible solution to an acute problem: how a new art, shattering aesthetic norms and visual conventions, might achieve collective resonance. The price of the modern artist's subjective isolation, Einstein had argued in the Cubism chapter of the book's first edition in 1926, was a tremendous need for a collectively valid form. Forms with universal sexual connotations, gestalt types, he called them, that lie within human beings themselves could serve as a bridge from the private subjectivity of the socially insulated contemporary artist to the collective. Under the momentary spell of hallucinations, in a virtual state of demonic possession, Picasso, Einstein argued, was creating new objects, visual myths that constituted a new visual reality inhabited by creatures of a formal mythology, or as he wrote in French, a mythology of forms. By this, Einstein primarily had in mind the series of grotesquely malformed figures dating from 1927 to 1930. This relates to the images Maria Stabernacki was showing yesterday. This period, 27 to 30, Einstein dubbed mythic realism. In the 1931 edition of The Art of the 20th Century, Einstein had drawn a sharp contrast between Picasso and Braque. For Picasso, he wrote, painting is just a medium and often too limited, while for Braque, painting is everything and the goal. Braque is the Latin who constrained himself puristically and deliberately sacrificed himself for the perfection of his craft. Braque's art was governed by classical belle mesure, by classical equilibrium, by self-control. Braque's conscious self-restraint precluded everything dramatic. Yet now, in a book completed only a year later, with no mention of Picasso as art, Einstein theorizes and interprets Braque much as he had theorized and interpreted Picasso in The Art of the 20th Century. Braque is no longer driven by the pursuit of perfection in his painterly craft, but like Picasso, is possessed by visions and hallucinations. In Cubism, Braque had, I quote Einstein here, altered the structure of seeing, yet now he dares a more complex and more deadly adventure. We read of psychograms, of Braque's daring to plunge into the hallucinatory currents. His paintings grow from visions, thus from absolutely chaotic events. Since the war, he too has embraced, Einstein now applies this term to Braque, mythic realism. This interpretation of works plausibly enough with Picasso's monstrous creatures of the late 1920s. It is hard to square with the illustrations in Georges Braque, which overwhelmingly consist of still lifes with guitars, fruits, bottles, and other familiar paraphernalia of Cubist still life. It is these that make up the vast majority of Brock's oeuvre through the 20s and early 30s. Indeed, 8 of the post-war paintings in the Brock section in the third edition of The Art of the 20th Century, offered there as examples of the painter's classical belle mesure, including the two I show you here, are now carried over into Georges Braque, the book, presumably as examples of the Braque who works under the spell of visions and hallucinations. Since Einstein seldom refers to any specific works in his text, it's difficult to know how he would reconcile this apparent contradiction. What exactly is going on here? Allow me to speculate. Throughout the 1920s, following his intense political engagement during the immediate post-war era, Einstein's writing seemed untroubled by questions concerning the social or political agency of avant-garde art. When he did broach the topic, he sarcastically dismissed efforts by artists such as George Grosz and the Russian avant-garde for what he perceived as their artistic weaknesses. The road to bad art was paved with good political intentions. But in the Surrealism chapter in the third edition of The Art of the 20th Century, a completely new component of the text, which had not existed in the first two editions, this changed. He observed an impending crisis in the estrangement of the ascendant industrial proletariat from the dominant culture, not to mention from the avant-garde. The failure of artists and intellectuals to face this issue was a cause for what he termed their increased isolation. He returned to this question in Georges Braque. The working class, he observes, has no need of art and condemns it as diversion or luxury. He recognizes that the proletariat has more urgent needs than art. One should, he concedes, get used to the idea that for the present, a time without art is possible and necessary. An astonishing sentiment coming from Einstein, and one in conflict with the utopian views he expresses in the last two chapters of the book. He concludes Georges Braque with a serene assertion of mission accomplished. Its final sentence reads, "Myth has once more been integrated into the real, and poetry again becomes an originary element of the real." As Einstein became more focused on what in Georges Braque he termed the sociological situation of art today, he must have recognized that the aesthetic refinement he had previously lauded in Braque's art made for a poor fit with his critique of liberalism and its culture of aesthetic nuance. This, arguably, is why he had to radicalize Braque beyond recognition. This painter he had formerly praised for his lucid and audacious purity, for his cultivation of painterly craft, could be seen as a symptom of the aesthetic culture of liberalism that was Einstein's target in Georges Braque. To make Braque fulfill the radical demands that Einstein now made on art, he read into it qualities and invested it with a power that it could not sustain. One might say, anticipating the title of a book manuscript he completed exactly 1 year later, 1 year after the publication of Georges Braque, that he was fabricating a fiction. Within his publications, Einstein's incipient sobriety about the social status of contemporary art first became evident in a catalog essay he published in November 1931 for an exhibition of ancient bronzes in a New York gallery. This is what I mentioned in the discussion of the previous session. Perhaps that it was being published in America and in a foreign language liberated Einstein to express his growing doubts. That text was a new departure in Einstein's work, dealing with art on which he had written nothing previously. In its broad historical scope, it looks ahead to the Handbook of Art Project, which has a central place in the Neolithic Childhood Exhibition. The show featured Hittite, Etruscan, Greek, and Egyptian statuettes. Taking the long historical view, Einstein now acknowledged the yawning gap that divided the art of modernity from these cultures. The works of early antiquity, he writes, were expressions of an important magical worldview and functioned in the preservation of the people and their gods. A statue at that time signified much more than a mere representation or an isolated creation in form. It served a precise purpose, namely the preservation and strengthening of life. The contrast with modernity was acute, and I continue the quotation. "Art has evaporated into vague cloudiness, and works of art sink into a swamp of circumspections. Let us frankly admit that art has forfeited its spiritual power, since it is no longer harnessed to the service of a great and well-disciplined scheme of things. Art by itself can never create the scheme of values, and purely aesthetic and formal criteria reveal precisely the spiritual poverty of a large part of contemporary artistry. End of quotation. These remarks would seem to mark a major revision of Einstein's utopian claims for modern art's agency, and yet in the final two chapters of Georges Braque, completed the following year, he was still evidently clinging to that utopia. It appears that a decisive and irreversible turning point must have come by the beginning of 1934, a few months before Georges Braque went to press. A lacerating self-critique appears among the notes and fragments for Einstein's never-completed autobiographical novel, Babelpant 2. And two of these are in an envelope. It's like 30-odd scraps of paper that have been obviously cut out of a typescript. And two of these are dated to January and February of 1934, and one assumes, since they were together, that this statement also is from that time. This is what he writes. The perpetual phony revolutionary becomes utterly sterile and remains hopelessly behind the changing condition of the times because he is always fighting for the same revolutionary utopia which he seeks to achieve by a change in artistic form. That sums up the faith that Einstein had expressed in his Art of the 20th Century and in the last two chapters of Georges Braque. Its illusoriness must now have become even more painfully apparent since Hitler's seizure of power. This devastating realization must have been the catalyst for Einstein's plan to write The Fabrication of Fictions, Die Fabrikation der Fiktionen. Artists will never make major history, he writes there. Today's modernism will fade away, for it lacks norms and social commitment. This art will perish in autistic over-refinement and playful isolation. In Georges Braque, Einstein had confidently proclaimed the death of bourgeois liberalism, a remnant of the 19th century with its cultivation of nuance manifested in the art of the Impressionists, its shattering of the real into myriad opinions. The art of Braque, and by implication that of Picasso, Klee, and the Surrealists, was extolled as an antidote to that culture. The turning of the tide had begun with Cubism. Fabrication of Fictions is, among other things, a recognition that liberalism had never died. It had merely entered a new phase. Worse, there was no longer so much as a hint of any effective opposition on the part of artists and intellectuals. The avant-garde in its solipsistic isolation was now seen as an acute symptom of the persistent liberal mentality. It is, incidentally, this book, this manuscript, the first time that the term avant-garde appears in Einstein's writing, and he uses it repeatedly, yet with the thickest irony. For now, the senescent avant-garde, die ergreiste avant-garde, the senescent avant-garde hobbled along belatedly behind the masses. Despite all claims for its modernity, Einstein declares, our most recent art is negative and reactionary. We develop ideas, spin fairy tales, or paint pictures, yet we're the first to be deceived by our works. After the appearance of Georges Braque, Einstein never again published on art, yet he did not abandon writing on it. Around the time he resumed work on his hugely ambitious and incomplete project, a Handbuch der Kunst, a handbook of art, if the Fabrication of Fictions marked a cathartic reckoning with his own delusions about modernism, the handbook and another late unfinished project, Le Traité de la Vision, may be partly understood as Einstein's attempt to rethink art, its history, and what he now saw as the failed project of modernism within that trajectory. One topic in the notes for the handbook reads, on the creation of aesthetic fictions of existence, art and its claim to influence reality. Einstein's own former utopian hopes for art had now become relativized, historicized, a subject for critical investigation. Thank you.